You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, SFU's community radio station broadcasting live from Burnaby, BC.
In this segment of our show, Craig Jameson will be telling us a little bit about his connection to TDC and his band.
So you were telling me that you're doing an upcoming event called Dance Away Depression. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, sure, Cam. Thanks for asking. So we're doing an event called Dance Away Depression. It's to support mental health. And it's this idea of the way that music and movement can heal as well as connect people. So the idea is that we get some bands together that play upbeat music, and people come out and have a good time, kind of shake their stresses away. And while they're there, we're going to have the proceeds for the tickets that they purchase are going to go towards mental health support efforts. So I'm working with an organization called Mind Your Mind, and an organization, it's the same organization, but they have two sort of facets of the organization, and the other one's called Connects Ontario. And Mind Your Mind focuses more on the youth side of mental health, where Connects is over the overall encompassing all ages type mental health resources. And so that goes towards things like addiction services, hotlines to help support people, and just overall resources in general. So we're looking to sell 200 tickets to this event, and if all goes well, hoping to give the organizations a check for around $5,000 to help with their efforts. For the people, it's a dance party. We're calling it a dance-a-thon, so come on out and shake your moneymaker for mental health and wellness. My band's going to be playing a myriad of pop and rock covers that are upbeat that people can dance to. And Laura Gagnon, who also lives here in London, is a good friend of mine. She's going to be playing as well. Same type of style of music as well. And then we've got a DJ from Music Central Entertainment that's going to be spinning dance tunes as well throughout the night and to end the night as well. The ticket price will include a beer. Cowbell Brewery is sponsoring the event. So your ticket price includes one beer with Cowbell. And then also a snack. I haven't completely confirmed that yet. I'm talking with a couple different food truck vendors, but we'll definitely have something for you from the food side of things as well. It's August 19th. It's at a venue called Temperance here in London, which is on Adelaide Street North. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a fun time just to come out and dance your cares away on a Saturday night and help raise money for a good cause.
So what was it that inspired you to want to work in getting this out for mental health? Doing it in kind of a cool, relatable way might tend to open doors where just statistics on the subject wouldn't.
For sure. I suffer from mental health. I have it under control a lot now, but in my younger days, I got these crippling panic attacks and anxiety and stuff like that, and it was very tough for me to manage. And so these resources now would have been helpful for me. And I felt alone kind of in that struggle. And the biggest challenge was that nobody really got me. Nobody understood it. I had my friends and family and stuff, but because they weren't going through it, they just sort of saw it as like, go for a run, exercise, chill out, do whatever, like it's going to be fine kind of thing, and didn't really kind of validate my situation. And it wasn't until I started learning more about it through said resources, talking to doctors, and also learning, like talking with like-minded people that are going through the same type of thing, that I really started to kind of understand this and accept it as part of what was going on in my life and learning how to manage it. And so I know there's a lot of people out there that are going through the same things that I went through. And I just want to try and help it make it easier on them, because it really is an affliction, and it's something that needs to be kind of top of mind. It needs to be not stigmatized, easily discussed. And these people need people to support them and understand them and accept them. So being a musician, I was thinking, like, I'm very big on this cause. So being a musician, I thought, you know, how can I give back to the community? How can I help raise money for that cause? And so that's where Dance Away Depression was born. Again, this idea of throwing events where people come out and you know, see live music and dance and have a good time, but all the while are supporting this cause, and the money we raise goes to helping the effort.
So do you have any advice for folks out there who might be starting on their mental health journey, just how to deal with diagnosis and keep themselves strong in the harder times?
Yeah, for sure. Don't hesitate. Like, get the help, right? Go talk to social workers, doctors. There's lots of, obviously, you know, free resources and things like that. There's websites like Mind Your Mind, Connects Ontario, AML, Mental Health Association, lots of resources. The internet's a great way to kind of learn about it, but really understand what it is. And then look for ways for healing, right? To try and, I think that, you know, for me anyway, it was about acceptance. It was about accepting that this was going to be something that I was going to have to deal with, and then I had to understand how I was going to manage it. And then once I understood how I could manage it, it became manageable, being able to utilize the resources that were provided to me, whether that's, you know, medication or just breathing techniques, or there's many ways to manage this, and getting the help you need is, and don't feel bad about it, right? Like, this is something that tons of people go through, especially in today's day and age where the world kind of got up in a hurry and there's so much more stresses on us as human beings, that you know, we need to be mindful of that and take care of ourselves. So I think, you know, my advice is be mindful of it. Don't hesitate as far as learning what it is and how to manage it. And don't be shy or embarrassed by it at all. And it's like, talk about it, communicate it, get the help that you need, because the latter is worse. This stuff can kind of eat you up, and it can have dire consequences. So it's better to get the help that you need.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks again.
In this segment of our show, Maria Bangash will be giving us an update on Smile Canada. So what's the latest with Smile?
We've been really busy recently. We've launched our current campaign, Move for Smile. It is our yearly summer campaign where members of our community get super active by paddleboarding, doing walks and runs, playing sports together, all in the name of fundraising for our children and youth here. Currently, our focus for this fundraiser is on our hospital support program, which provides support for our children and youth who are in the hospital currently or who are looking at end-of-life care, as well as our pediatric population, providing support to get them respite care, equipment, essential therapies, whether it be psychotherapy or ABA therapies. This campaign is really pivotal to us every year, as it provides support to some of our most, I'd argue, used funds or used programs that are the most popular by our community.
So can you tell me a little bit about which programs specifically those are that you're hoping to benefit?
Right. So the first one, like I mentioned, is the hospital support program. Our hospital support program is essential to any of our children who are currently in the hospital. whether it's providing a warm meal for the parents so that they have something to eat while they're, you know, at their stay at the hospital, paying for parking passes and making sure that our families aren't, you know, going, providing too much money into parking. It can get very expensive, especially with extended stays as well. And our second sort of, I guess, pocket that we're looking into is providing support for any of our pediatric population. So covering costs for therapy, adaptive equipment, respite care, and just supporting our families through things like diagnosis and working through the system. As I'm sure you know, it's really complicated and there's so many steps and paperwork. There's a lot of barriers in place, especially when you're a newcomer or a migrant to this country, and just making sure that our families are fully supported to the best of our capacity.
So how are you reaching out to folks who might be interested in your work to ask them for their support?
If listeners were to go to our website, smilecan.org, right on our front page, you'll see the Move for Smile campaign, or on wantsgood.com, if you searched up Smile Canada Support Services or Move for Smile, you'll be able to find our landing page there with all of our active campaigns.
So how does this year's campaign compare to previous years? Have you seen a lot of differences or a lot of similarities?
I would say this year it has been a little bit of a struggle with our campaign. Definitely there's a lot going on right now just around the world, and it's been a little tricky, but I think even in our most difficult moments as a community, we've been able to rally together and show support for one another.
That being said, in your time with Smile, has there been any success moment or story you'd like to share?
I'd say one of my proudest moments at Smile is every year in September when we put on our massive sporting event known as RecFest. Every year, Smile puts on an event for over 1,000 families at the Hangar in Downsview Park. This event is also up and coming as well on September 20th at the Hangar. Every year when we put on this event, getting to meet all of our families after so long being communally gathered together, watching our kids play adapted sports, get a chance to eat something really yummy, and just sharing this sense of community and togetherness, I'd say it's one of my favorite times of the year.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need for the work of Smile and to help migrant families coming in navigate these systems and have the supports they need, what would you say?
I would say right now we are in very unprecedented, very difficult times, and the influx of newcomers coming to Canada is only increasing day by day, and so many of these young children need access to essential support that would quite honestly help them survive. And Smile support is so tailored and custom towards the needs of the community that we support. And without these essential services we provide, these children will fall through the cracks. They won't get the support that they need and that they deserve with dignity, with care, with respect. And I think that's what separates Smile from so many other services, is that we look at making sure that the people we're treating are treated with the utmost respect and care, and that their culture and their background and where they've come from, all these things are put into consideration. And I think that is what makes us so important, that we strive for excellence with the population that we serve.
So what are some of the specific steps you take to take culture and background into consideration when you're making sure they get their supports?
I'd say our service navigation team does an amazing job, whether it's making sure that everything we email and that we send out on flyers or text messages is offered in all the languages that are spoken amongst our families, in Urdu and Arabic and Farsi and Dari and Somali, such and such. We make sure everything is provided in a language that is understood by our community. All of our services are also offered in custom language support as well, so that our families feel fully involved in what we're talking about and making sure that they have a say in everything that their child needs and the support that they require. We make sure that the events we put on are in safe spaces where people understand one another. Even little things like considering allergies whenever we're providing meals or snacks or anything like that. The small things go such a long way, and obviously understanding the context is, I feel, the most important. understanding the context of where these families are coming from, all that they've been through and all that they dealt with, making sure that we honor and cherish their stories and that we only uplift them.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
No, of course.
Handy Link will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Whether you're on the go or staying home, make CJAM the soundtrack to your day. Tune into 99.1 FM on your radio or visit cjam.ca to listen live or access past shows. You can also stream us right from iHeartRadio. Just visit iHeartRadio.ca or download the iHeartRadio app. And if you feel like it, connect with us on social media. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all at CJAM FM. Keep yourself close to the music. CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching higher ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome back to Handy Link. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Mario Bankash told us a little bit about the latest happenings with Smile, and we heard from musician Craig Jameson.
In this segment of our show, Robert Dinerstein will be telling us a little bit about his advocacy work. So tell me a little bit about your work in disability advocacy and the law.
I'm a retired law professor from American University, Washington College of Law, and retired in 2024. Among other things, in addition to teaching in the disability rights area at a seminar in that over many years, I started and taught and directed our disability rights law clinic, which we started in 2005, in which law students under faculty supervision represented clients and families with disabilities in a variety of issues. Special education, alternatives to guardianship, Americans with Disabilities Act cases, and the like. So that one element of my background, I guess, is that in the kind of the teaching area. I've also done, you know, extensive writing and presentations in the area. Before I went to American in 1982, I was an attorney in the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department in their special litigation section. And in that capacity, I brought cases against state and local institutions that were locking up people with disabilities, particularly intellectual disability or mental health or psychosocial disabilities. So I had done that work for about 5 years before going into teaching. Throughout my teaching career and now subsequent to it, I've been involved in various organizations, advocacy organizations, sometimes as a presenter or as an advisor to grants and things, and most recently I am just about to end my 3-year term as chair of the Commission on Disability Rights of the American Bar Association, and I'm continuing on as the co-chair of the Disability Rights Committee of the ABA Civil Rights and Social Justice Section. So there's been a lot of opportunity, some of it caused by some of the policies in the new administration that have required advocacy on behalf of people with disabilities, and I continue to do that work. And then finally, I'll just say, I do have a younger sister with intellectual disability, and although I didn't go into the area because of that connection, I'm sure it certainly has informed the way I look at these issues over the many years.
So, as one who's dealt with a whole plethora of different organizations and different needs over the years, are there any common trends for things that society has an imminent need to take action on? Anything that disability rights should include right here, right now, sort of thing?
Well, I guess I would start with the idea of attitude and also a sense of representation. From an attitudinal standpoint, much of the history, certainly in our country, of the way people have dealt with people with disabilities has been reflected by a kind of overprotectiveness or paternalism, that even when people have been well-intentioned, they sort of view disability as something to pity, and the people who have disabilities as pitiable, and consequently they want to step in and save them or protect them. I think that attitude, which is certainly changing, although it's not completely gone, has been problematic for a lot of people with disabilities who don't necessarily see their disabilities as tragic or as something to overcome, but rather as simply part of who they are. And that a lot of times the limitations that people with disabilities experience have less to do with their actual impairment and more to do with how society responds. So first thing I would say is to try to, you know, get away from that kind of noblesse oblige or paternalistic attitude, as well as what is still also very persistent, which is the stigma associated with certain kinds of disabilities. And here I'm thinking particularly about mental health disabilities, that to describe oneself as having bipolar disorder or schizophrenia or serious depression has historically been something that others respond negatively to. They may be afraid of it, they may not understand it. Again, that's changing somewhat, but it has not gone away. I'd say a third important principle that relates to these two is captured by the phrase that is common in the movement, which is called nothing about us without us. And there, the idea is that people with disabilities themselves should be very prominent in the disability advocacy movement. Allies, for example, such as me, who do not have a disability, certainly can be, you know, side by side with people with disabilities, but it's important to recognize that people with disabilities have their own voices, they have their own experiences, and they should be encouraged to lead and not simply be, again, people who receive benefits, so to speak. And I guess the last thing I'll just say is that disability is a complex characteristic. It, of course, includes many different conditions, from ones people are born with to ones that people acquire. Also, an important element is that of intersectionality, so that people who have disabilities but are also racial minorities or women or LGBTQ people may experience different kinds of discrimination or multiple kinds of discrimination in the workplace, in society, and those conditions need to be taken into account. It's not a one-size-fits-all, even if you're in the same sort of diagnostic category, so to speak.
So do you have any advice for folks out there who might be allies, such as yourself, just to get better informed, steps they can take just to increase their own base knowledge to be the best representative and partner for the disability community that they can?
Sure. Well, in one case, if you have particular people with whom you come into contact and you want to be helpful to them, obviously, is to start from the place of asking them what they want you to do for them. Don't assume it. Don't just offer assistance without being asked, but really try to be open-minded and thoughtful in your communications with them. From an organizational standpoint, there are a number of organizations, certainly in Canada and also in the States and in many places, who specialize in advocacy on behalf of people with disabilities, usually in some subgroup. So, for example, in we have the ARC, which advocates for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. We have groups like the Bazelon Center for Mental Health Law, which focuses on people with psychosocial disabilities or mental disabilities. There are independent living centers that tend to focus more on people with physical disabilities. Again, as I said before, there's overlap in these kinds of groups, but so that if you were in a community and you were thinking, gee, I'd like to be helpful here, one thing to do would be to reach out to those organizations, which may be looking for volunteer assistance or even just, frankly, financial assistance, if that's something you're able to provide. But I really would start with that first point about not making the ableist assumption about what people really need, and simply talking to them and finding that out.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Friends, I'm just going to come out and say it. For those who enter into the disability world, no matter how you get there, becoming an advocate, a truly passionate advocate, is a lifetime pursuit. Hearing Robert's stories of the legal changes and the ongoing work to push forward sounds like a lifetime worth of research and devotion to the cause. And that's where the best advocates come from. Recognizing disability is not a hat. You don't just take it off at night when it's uncomfortable or when you're out of the public eye. It's something that you carry with you. Whether you're someone with a disability yourself or you're connected to someone, and by the way, we're all connected to someone if you dig deep enough, it's something that really does take hold of your heart. When you recognize these are not subjects of pity or charity cases or a legal obligation, you come to realize these are some of the most creative, innovative, devoted people on Earth. For the truth is, individuals with disabilities, they know what works for them. They know what's practical and what's not. To be truthful, we as a society can make all the assumptions we want about what legal protections should be there, but we're just spinning our wheels if we don't ask the question, what do you need? What do you think would help in your specific case? Asking those questions, having those discussions, gives you a real foundation to build from. Nothing about us without us isn't just a saying, something that applies to each and every one of us. My late friend, Dr. Marcia Ryu, simplified that once. She said, nothing without us, meaning people with disabilities shouldn't be included separately into those discussions. They should be brought in simply as a matter of course, as with all things. For individuals with disabilities aren't a separate community unto themselves. They're a part of every community. They are a thread that weaves through every group in society. It can be a question of acknowledgement or a question of, am I willing to accept this on any given day? But for individuals with disabilities, no matter what strata of life you look at, they are present and they do need consideration, dignity, and respect. And that's what we all strive for, isn't it? Just equal consideration. Some people live under that myth that says a person with a disability wants an unfair advantage, or they're trying to exploit the system, trying to take too much. Those are fallacies. Most individuals with disabilities just want what they need to be able to contribute, to be a part of the community. Sometimes I ask myself the question, how can someone with a disability be expected to live by society's standards? They're not given the opportunity to be a part of that society. The more we include, the more we expand our own thinking, the better off we'll be. Life is all about that. One of my favorite quotes of all time is the words, don't be afraid of moving slowly. Be afraid of standing still. And as a people, we must never, ever allow ourselves to just say, it's good enough, we've done all we can for the disability community. For if we do that, we stop asking those questions of, is this continuing to work? Is the structure we built yesterday still safe to go into today? Disability affects us all, let's be honest. Global statistics place disability somewhere in the 20% range. Fact is, that's way underplaying it. But the truth is, people with disabilities don't always disclose. It's not always a condition we've identified. It's not always something we would readily understand. That's what disability progress is, understanding more and more what it really means to live with any given condition, and recognizing it is not a limitation, it is an opportunity to think in a new way. It is a chance not only for that person to find their own strength and to grow. It's a chance for us in society to expand our own thinking, to let our ideals and actions match, to allow ourselves to get to know different types of people. It's fine to travel in the same homogenized circles. You'll have friends, you'll have the people you're close to, but you won't necessarily grow beyond your own scope of thinking. And that is a self-imposed punishment. We all deserve to understand the richness and the fullness of life. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.
You're listening to CJSF at 90.1 FM in Burnaby.
is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, August 15th, 2024.